welcome everybody to another grilling episode. At least we hope it will be. You'd be the judge at the end of this one of Running Into the Fog. Eric, it's always a pleasure to get together on these every other Wednesdays with you. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. Happy summer solstice day. First official day of summer.
Today's?
Yep.
June the 21st. Cool. Well, it wasn't summer, but it was springtime, or at least it felt summery. I'm going to go back to a story from many years ago in introducing our guest today. We have one attendee on the line that might remember this story of, let's say it was 2005, 6, 7, somewhere in there. I visited some really dear friends of mine in Tampa, Florida, probably Palm Harbor, Florida, to be exact. And I walk into this house, beautiful home, to see my friend Evan Weston, who I had worked with at the investment firm I worked for prior to Aurora. And there sat this young man. At the time, I think his hair was a little shaggier than it might be today. And I said, "Well, who's this, Evan?" "Well, that's my bonus son." So this bonus son concept is something I associate with directly. I've got a bonus son who I met when he was 15 months old. I know Evan's been in your life forever. The concept of being a bonus dad, just as though it might be a bonus son, the reverse role is pretty special. You know, if you let yourself embrace that. And as I enjoyed my visit to Tampa close to 20 years ago, and first was introduced to this young man who's our guest today, I thought, you know, he's going to go on to do some pretty big things. Seemed like you had your act together back then, Jake, and sure seems like you still have your act together today. So welcome, Jake Bernstein, to Running Into the Fog. We're really happy you're here.
Thanks, Derek. Eric, great to be with you, and thanks so much for having me.
Hey, who was the kicker, the NFL kicker for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that you was your doppelganger forever?
So it was Martin Gramatica, not to be confused with his brother, Bill Gramatica, who was the one who jumped up and tore his ACL. So I first wanted to make that clear, but okay. It was Martin. I looked like him at the age of 17 when he was probably 10, 12 years older, so much so that I went to a Bucs game, got on the Jumbotron 7 times in one game, and was invited to meet Martin at practice, where he was oddly confused as to why I look so much like him and where I might have come from.
maybe our production team can Google a picture of Martin Gramatica sometime. We'll bring that up in the second half of our time today. Do a side by side.
I may have one that I could tee up as well if screen sharing is allowed of us actually side by side. So if time permits, we can make that happen.
All right. So let's go back to the beginning, Jake. You know, tell us about, I already buried the lead to a certain extent. Where'd you grow up? Influential people in your life? Kind of what, your childhood was like. And then, we'll get to modern day, stuff going on in the life of Jake and his now family. I know you got a young son, and we'll talk about that, your first Father's Day with your little guy. And, just want to look forward to jamming here for 25 minutes before we invite some guests on.
Sure. That sounds good. Thanks, Derek. So, yeah, I grew up in Palm Harbor, Florida. Grew up there my whole life, and right outside the Tampa Bay area, as you mentioned. Growing up, I was very closely tied with my parents, both Evan, who's on the call as my bonus dad, my mother, Ronnie, and then my dad, David, and my stepmom, Melissa, as well. And, family's always been really important to me. And as Evan and I actually joked around about over the weekend, I worked hard growing up, both in school, out of school, and trying to get involved in a ton of extracurricular activities, which, I think put me on a good path where I went to high school in Tampa. I played sports. I was involved in a bunch of clubs, extracurriculars, volunteering, and the like. And from an early age, just trying to think beyond myself, help others, and give back in ways that I think has shaped how I interact in society today, but also in terms of who I am, the business professional too. So growing up, my parents were sort of my rock collectively. As I grew and matured, I would say I got involved in sports in high school, playing basketball as a scrappy point guard, typically coming off the bench, taking charges. But it was that heart, hustle, and determination that sort of core to who I am today. I credit some of my basketball coaches, both at the JV and varsity level, who really shaped who I am and kind of the way I go about my day-to-day today.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Eric, I'm going to turn to you. Any questions, initial questions for Jake, reactions to that?
Well, you know, this is the first time we've met Jake, and I've been looking forward to it since Derek told me he got you lined up for this. And I guess my question is, you know, today as a business professional, I'm very curious about the work that you're doing and would love it if you would give us a quick overview of your work and sort of where how you got where you are today and sort of where you think that's taking you.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric. So I graduated from Washington University in St. Louis in 2010, and I was a political science and Spanish major, you know, loved studying abroad when I was in Madrid, thought early on, and perhaps from the counsel of my mother, that going to law school was sort of the right move or a path forward that made sense. Quickly determined that law school wasn't necessarily in the cards for me. I'm not very good at standardized tests, and always thought that there are other ways to maybe show acumen. That being said, graduated from WashU, and I actually took on sort of an internship and an early stage position at a college marketing company, which at the time was called Off Campus Media. So I had been a student ambassador, trying to get people to come to events, local businesses, and it was really my first foray into sort of startup life. And so I started just immersing myself in the business and trying to learn as much as possible, always be a sponge. And regardless of how well we did as a business or how I did for myself, I just wanted to learn and be able to apply it moving forward. Over the next couple of years, that company spawned into another one called Bonfire. Bonfire is an employee communications platform that helps drive and shape culture in the corporate world today. But we had all actually been through a couple of pivots ranging from a series of event apps and photo sharing apps, which just helped me understand how early stage companies pivot and go through different iterations. In essence, I was our first full-time employee there and our first full-time sales hire as well. And so what that enabled me to do is wear what felt like 30 hats across sales and marketing when we were a company of 10 to 15 people. And although I may not have had the formal training or skill to actually do some of those things, it was very much trial by fire or bonfire in that case. So I was there for about 8 years combined, and I served as an individual contributor on the sales side, a sales manager, and a sales leader, all kind of in one. But it felt great to have a seat at the table, you know, when we were small and growing and thriving. From there, I transitioned to a company called Clearcut Analytics. The company was actually founded by friends of mine from middle school and high school. And so it was actually an interesting foray to not only work with friends, but actually bring the skill set that I had derived at Bonfire into this organization that I think really needed it. And so the kind of friend and coworker dynamics, I think, worked out well. And for about 2 years, I built our sales systems, our structure, our process. And over those 2 years, we were actually then bought by a company called Spins, based here in Chicago, which is a consumer packaged goods data and insights company. And today, I lead the business development representative team, which for all intents and purposes is responsible for lead generation, creating new opportunities, finding that new business. And recently, I've sort of been dubbed the AI czar, helping understand the role that AI can play in the revenue organization and how it's kind of changing the sales development world as we know it. So that's how I got here today.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, you know, it strikes me, I think I remember hearing about Bonfire a few years ago when we were in the market for event apps.
That's right.
I think I'm probably in your leads from those days, going back to that point in time. We actually ended up building our own, and I kind of wish we hadn't in hindsight a little bit. But anyway, water under the bridge, experience points, you know, apply. But it strikes me that, would you consider yourself really a sales strategist and sort of biz dev professional? Is that how you describe your
role? Yeah. But I think in today's day and age, there's some shades of gray associated with that, because when you look at sort of the customer experience, it's important to be knowledgeable about every stage of the funnel. Top of the funnel, as an opportunity develops, what does the handoff look like to customer success? And how do you create strong advocacy of that customer so that they go tell their friends and the process can sort of repeat? So sales development and sales strategy is probably where I sit most, or where I think, you know, what I think about most days.
Well, as Dad used to say, nothing happens until somebody sells something.
Right. And
I think that was paraphrasing Ford, if I remember right, from the Ford Motor Company. Well, it's really great to hear your story. And I think, Jake, as you sort of imagine back to, you know, your sort of immediate post-college self, which was a lot less time ago than it was for Derek and me, what kind of advice would you give that fresh graduate today here with, you've got what, maybe 13, 14 years of experience under your belt? Is there any, you know, advice that you would give your 22-year-old self on either how to do things differently, how to do things quicker? And, you know, this actually comes up because I was out west doing a facilitation with some entrepreneurs last week. And one of the questions was, how long will it take you to repeat the success that you've gotten to? And this was a group of people in their 50s and 60s. I think the mean response was, I could do it again in about 3 years, you know, knowing what I know now. And I don't know if that's true or not, or just sort of wishful thinking, but I'm always interested in hearing, you know, at every stage of career, you know, what sort of reflections do you have on the water under the bridge time spent that, you know, would either accelerate you, maybe provide you with different experiences, or advice you'd give your younger self to do things differently?
Yeah. You know, I'll double down briefly on sort of always be learning. And Evan, who's on the call, will probably be shaking his head. Yes, yes, yes. So I would keep going with that, but at the same time, learn a little bit faster, that as you are failing or as something is not succeeding, you know, pivot and change directions a little more quickly. And that could relate to a given role that someone's in, a function that they're performing, or just an experiment that they're running in their current day-to-day or role. I think back then it was a little harder to have very precise tracking on, you know, little experiments run, whether it's a sales campaign or otherwise, but I would probably get a little more analytical from then too. And I think just being a little younger, not having as much academic background and sort of being analytical or data minded, I would force myself to be sort of data minded a little bit more early on, so that I could get smarter about how related to the bigger picture as well.
Great advice. And Derek, I'm going to toss to you in just 1 second. I have a quick public service announcement though, and lieu of Jake's comment there, you'll see on your screen a QR code. If you scan that QR code, that is for the POAP that we distribute as a result of this conversation. We've got 3 POAPs that we give away. The first one is the Unthinkable POAP. Hopefully Jake is giving you some new ideas to think about here during this first half hour. About halfway through, you folks on social get to go away. And if you haven't joined the full-time Zoom webinar bridge at that point, we don't expect you to. So you've got about 15 minutes to make the leap over here to the bridge. So visit openrecon.com and just follow the intuitive just instructions you see there as well. And then finally, there is an unspeakable token that you can grab in the second half. That's when we turn the panel over to you. You know, we've got up to 3 interlocutors who can join. My guess, since I see Evan's in the audience, is Evan is going to be one of those voluntold folks who's going to be joining as an interlocutor, but we've got 2 more slots available for you to come on and have a one-on-one with Jake. So please raise your hand in the chat here on the bridge and let us know that you'd like to join the second half. Derek, sorry, I had to get that in edgewise.
No, you're absolutely fine. Evan is going to be the first one. So get ready there, old man, and bring your best questions. Jake, I've got 2 different paths I want to follow with you. The first is becoming a new dad and trying to manage, you know, you operate in a scrappy, you talk about the skills that you learned as being a, you know, 6th man coming off the bench, scrappy point guard, all the coaching that you got, translating that to the sales world. What's the takeaway there for how 2 working parents, married people, need to both communicate and continue to scrap to kind of make it through the demands of these days?
Yeah.
And also maintain your sanity and your relationship. Do you have any advice for the listeners out there?
Not too dissimilar than being on a team in sports. And I will go back to 2 days ago when we were coming back from Maine, actually, and we're on the flight home and our son didn't sleep on the way. He didn't sleep when we took off, and we are just trying to keep him occupied and busy for the 2.5 hour flight. Now, fortunately, he did fall asleep about 2/3 into the flight, but I was tired. My wife was a little tired, and we were just pulling out all the stops for him to stay occupied. But that team dynamic is what keeps us sane. And we understand that on a given day, in the time that either our son is not at daycare or on a weekend when we are playing with him or taking him for a walk or whatever it might be, we are in this together. And so we are also extremely structured and routinized, not to the point of down to the minute he's going into his bath or bed, but generally speaking, we keep to a pretty strict schedule. That keeps us sane, but I think our son in line too. And we can kind of see it in terms of how he behaves and how he you know, is just growing and meeting milestones. But, you know, with work in life, I think the same structure is key. We focus on our work time during the day while our son is at daycare. When he comes home, say 5 to 8 p.m., when we're doing all the things, we know that's time to prioritize family. And from there, we'll kind of wind down. So structure and routine is absolutely critical and working together.
He's got a first birthday coming up.
Coming up July 3rd.
Mm-hmm. July 3rd.
Yeah.
My daughter was born on July 3rd. They share a birthday. I've got a 10-year-old, about to be 10-year-old daughter. Now I'll never forget that day for a little Shane.
Here we go.
I bought a minivan when my last daughter was born, and I'm kind of ready to move on from that minivan category of my life. Let's, kind of stay on that theme. You know, I think in today's busy business world, the default assumption is that, you know, if your child is sick and that you can't go to daycare, that the mom steps in, you know, and takes off for that day to be home with the sick kid. I suspect things don't operate that way in your house, and that you're, you know, instead of that, one of the first to raise their hands to say, you know, honey, I get that you might have a busy day at work. You go do your thing. I'll stay home with Shane. Any comment? Because I think there might be a takeaway there, you know, a chance to kind of reframe, you know, the traditional, quote unquote, traditional way that that's been handled. Mm-hmm. I think we're beyond that as a society. And I wonder if you might have a comment for our listeners on that topic.
Yeah. So I think we're fortunate in the way that overall work has evolved in remote or hybrid or some combination thereof, where either going into an office is flexible, or if you're working remote altogether, which my wife does, her company's based in New York. She's worked at home for 8 or 9 years. I go to the office a few times a week, but can work at home from home any day. So I choose. And so overall, that naturally has lent itself to, well, taking care of your son or child, if they simply have an appointment or early dismissal, is simply physically more doable than maybe it was before. But I think just given where we are in society today, some of those norms have lightened up to where absolutely, you know, I can take Shane for a given period and maybe my wife takes him later or not at all. If she's out of town, you know, and I need to tell my manager, hey, I've got my son to myself for the next 3, 5, 8 hours, that is totally acceptable as well. And so there's flexibility for the employee. And I think there's more flexibility given by, you know, managers or sort of reporting figures that further understand it than they did today. I'm a little guilty today because Shane has early dismissal. My wife's taking him and I have a networking event, but we do try to balance it out as much as possible to share the load and be a team, like I mentioned before.
So when your wife listens to the playback, if she's not on the live bridge, today is an outlier day.
Today's an outlier day. Okay. Yeah.
Good deal. I've got one other path, but I might close with that, Eric. Any other questions for Jake here?
I was going to get real CPG specific and kind of drill down a little bit on your expertise in the CPG side of things, but why don't you?
I think mine's a better pivot point to open it up to the guests. Why don't you go there?
Well, before I do that, I want to thank you also, Jake, for being on here. And this is your LinkedIn account. As you can see, we're streaming on your LinkedIn account. Well done getting your restream configured like that. We're probably going to have some embedded screens now echoing down through time, but I'll drop it in the chat here, your LinkedIn link. And I see my dogs have joined the webinar in the background here as well. So Derek, feel free to interrupt. But tell us more about what the trends are in CPG right now in terms of relationship building and all of the work that you're doing with spins. I'm really curious about what the sort of zeitgeist is these days with consumer packaged goods.
Yeah. So at Spins, we believe in that the industry is evolving to appeal to what we call the values-oriented shopper. These are shoppers who go to the grocery store maybe multiple times a week. They're shopping for products with certain certifications, such as gluten-free or paleo, or you know, other ones like upcycled in terms of how they're manufactured and produced. Because you know, ultimately we're trying to find products that are better for you and me. And so that's sort of the ethos behind Spins, in that we are providing the common language for both the consumers, the retailers, and other players in the ecosystem, like brokers, partners, distributors, who can all operate in terms of that shared language that helps consumers ultimately shop, buy, and find the products that are good for them. So that's sort of our ethos. And you know, we're also really trying to champion the challenger brands or emerging brands who, you know, are trying to disrupt the big CPG players, you know, a Coke or a Tropicana or what have you, because they have a unique product, a unique story. And, you know, we're sort of in it in terms of supporting those emerging brands more and more. You know, I think as you look at some categories like snacking and beverage, but also supplements, right? They're both trying to find, you know, functional benefits like adaptogens or nootropics or things that are good for your brain that you'll find in both your supplement, but also your soft drink that historically may have been, you know, a regular can of Coke or Diet Coke. And so there's a lot of disruption that's happening there. Functional is one of the things I think about most, as some of the early projects that I had both at Spins and Clearcut Analytics had to do with, you know, improve memory and cognition and essentially bringing your best self to work, life, and play. And so those are some of the things that kind of energize me and galvanize me there.
Well, I could use some improved memory, and I know our first interlocutor certainly could. That's going to come on the screen here in a few minutes. I'm sorry, I just can't help it, Evan. I know you're going to get me back for that. I want to talk about these experience camps.
Sure.
And I want to get to the bottom of why you feel so passionate about them. What was it about them that drew you to it? And what is an experience camp, you know, in Jake's world?
Yeah. So for the audience out there, experience camps is a one-week camp for kids who've lost a primary caregiver, parent, or sibling. And though I have not experienced loss in that regard, I was challenged by a family friend, family member, very close, a few years back, who asked, you know, what am I doing outside of my work, my life, my relationships, my friends to give back? And frankly, I didn't have that great of an answer. And so there was this kind of this hole in my world, my ethos, that I needed to find a way to give back. And experience camps became that cause. I got involved in part through a referral from a friend. I went to a happy hour with my wife, actually, where we learned about experience camps, and a couple of friends of hers had actually experienced loss around that time. Sort of this confluence of factors led us to experience camps, and it was the perfect cause to give back. So the camp itself, I go to the one in Decatur, Michigan, and it's aptly dubbed the best week ever for grieving children. 80% of the time, they're having fun, playing sports, doing activities. 20% of the time is sort of dedicated to a clinical aspect to help them grieve, and it's incredibly powerful. So that's how I've gotten involved, also so much so that I'm on our regional advisory committee here in Chicago and support our crowdfunding efforts every year. And that is the thing that sort of fills my cup outside of work and relationships. It's certainly a heavy cause, but it has also really helped me deal with grief more broadly, whether it impacts me personally or how I empathize with others. And just watching kids smile around other people who get it is incredibly powerful, and I love being involved.
That's really cool. Yeah, there's so many kids out there that, you know, that certainly isn't the route they would have chosen for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got some good friends who lost their mom, my good friend's wife, coming up on 2 years ago. And it can be, you know, it's quite a journey to come back from something like that. you know, I've said it before on this podcast, and I'll take the opportunity to say it again. You know, when our parents started seeing that end of life, Eric and I were both older. You know, while it wasn't enjoyable at age 24 to lose our dad, you know, it was still one of those things where I was a full grown functioning, you know, guy, you know, out with a job, right? So, you know, what you're talking about is, you know, youngsters losing a primary caregiver, and, you know, the home is all of a sudden void of, you know, that person, that role, that mentor, that parent, right? So, wow, that's a really good job done on your part to get involved in such a great cause.
Thanks.
Eric, are the dogs in a spot where you can come back on?
I think they've calmed themselves down now. We shall see, of course. One quick reminder, scan that QR code and redeem your PO app, because we got about 3 minutes before we're cutting over to Unspeakable. Evan, you are on deck. We're going to upgrade you in about 2 minutes to bring you on the panel. We're going to say goodbye to everybody on social. We've got two more slots left. So volunteers from the audience here on the webinar are encouraged to step forward and join the panel in the second half. It really sounds as though, Jake, like you've really found your niche in the world and in your career. And it sounds like you really are at a point where, you know, your career is beginning to blossom. You've got some success behind you, some directionality to it. And that's, I think, always something that for people in their 20s and their early 30s, takes a few years to kind of find that, you know, cadence and pace that they want to pursue for presumably the rest of your career. But I want to hear a little bit about your future before we say goodbye to the folks on social. What's next for Jake? Do you have any particular plans going forward? More kids in the picture, staying in Chicago, all that kind of fun stuff. That'd be a great little sneak preview of what's next for Jake before we say goodbye to the social folks.
Sure thing, Eric. So as it relates to my career, you know, one thing that I found interesting at Spins is we're a larger company, at least compared to my prior two, around 500 employees today compared to 20, 30, 40 at the previous two. And so there's a level of skill set and knowledge of what happens in a company of this size and stage and stature that I'm continuing just to envelop myself in and learn more about. That may predicate potentially what happens next, you know, finding at what stage of a company I want to be in, or perhaps go out on my own. But, you know, going back to always be learning, I'm getting a lot of hard skill sets that I think I can apply either on my own one day or maybe for a different type of team. So we'll see where that leads. As it relates to Chicago, you know, we're certainly very happy here, though I think many of us are in cold climates, Midwest, Northeast. Having grown up in Tampa, Florida, you know, warm weather could potentially be calling one day, perhaps to the chagrin of one or a few listeners here. That said, you know, sports fandom, I'm a rabid sports fan, as it'll be at least known from our Bucks example, that could maybe bring me back to the Tampa Bay area, but I'm taking it kind of 1 year at a time. And I would say from a kid's angle, I would say likely another is in our future. My brother and I were a family of two, as is my wife, family of two, or at least kids. So, we'll likely see where that takes us. Got our hands full with Shane as of right now. So taking that, every 2 weeks at a time.
You got any good stories of how you and your brother used to get after each other?
Ironically, not a ton. I remember probably three quote unquote fights, or at least just minor fisticuffs. Now, we are texting daily about every Tampa Bay Rays game and every little sports anecdote in between. So it must have been maybe because we didn't fight so much growing up. So now it's just incessant communication, which can be a little bit of a consternation on a nightly basis. So,
sure. Yeah, that's awesome.
I love it. Well, the time has come. If you haven't minted your PO app at this point, it's too late. So for those of you on social, thank you for joining us. Dasvidaniya, Robotov Siep Rusiska. We hope that you've enjoyed meeting Jake Bernstein here today, and head over to Open Recon if you'd like to join the panel.